And you mentioned earlier the duck boards. Talk to us about those.
Yeah, okay. Well, every second Friday in the training school, we had to scrub the floor and the duck boards. Now, the duck boards were very difficult to scrub and get dry and the rest of it. We used to hate the job. We used to scrub the floor with hard brooms and caustic soda to get the oil off, you know. Yeah. And that used to take nearly all the afternoon on the second Friday. Nobody liked that job.
And what were the duck boards used for?
Well, you always stood on duck boards in a factory. You didn't stand on the floor. You stood on duck boards.
And why? What? It was. Was there any reason behind that other than it being normal practice? Did it provide more grip?
I honestly don't know what the reason was. Perhaps it was so that the dirt on your boots would get scraped off on the duck boards instead of getting imprinted into the floor. I don't know. But, you had duck boards along the benches and you had a duck board on every machine. It was the same throughout the factory.
And every Friday you had to clean?
Every Friday they had to be scrubbed. Yeah.
And
I hate that job.
So there was a lot of moaning from apprentices when it was that Friday.
In the training school, yeah. It wasn't done anywhere else in the factory, only in the training school.
And I suppose that was to sort of teach you discipline and to make sure that the tools and the machines and the place that you were working.
Yeah, to teach you discipline, to keep things clean, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because one thing, Mr. Jim Fielding, when he was walking around his factory, one thing that he would always pick up was untidiness. So he used to come into the training school quite a lot. And he liked to see the place clean and tidy and spick-span, nothing, no tools lying about and this sort of thing. You know, so it all had to do with that. It was to teach you discipline right at the start, I suppose. Yeah.
And did Jim ever talk to you when he came into the apprentice school? What sort of things did he say to the apprentices and to you?
Okay, now, Jim Fielding was the managing director at the time. He had two, I think they were uncles, Jack and Frank, who were older than him. They were on the board, but they were there all the time. I think Frank was a designer, and I don't know, no, Jack was a designer. I know exactly what Frank's job was. But yeah, Jimmy used to come in and he would talk to you, ask you what you've been doing, and taking an obvious interest in what you were doing. Now, Frank, when you got out into the shops, when you'd been there for a while, Frank knew every apprentice in the company. He knew them by name, he knew where they'd been on their travels around the company, and he knew from that exactly what he thought they ought to know at that time. So he would come up to you in the shop, always ask the foreman's permission first to speak to you, and then he would ask you how you were, what you'd been doing, this, that, and the other. That was Frank. Now, the interesting thing was that when I went into the exhibition down at the Keys, I was on my own, there was nobody else in there, and then a lady and her husband came in, and I got talking to them, and it turned out that she was the sister of Frank Fielding, which was very interesting, yeah. But Frank, he was a remarkable man, and one of the things about Frank, he used to stutter a little bit, and we had a foreman in the pump shop where I was working once named Walt Andrews, and he used to stutter a lot. And when they got together, a conversation took all day. But Frank Fielding was a nice fellow. And you could suffer under Frank Fielding because he would know exactly what you should know. And if he asked you a question, he expected the right answer. Okay. He came up to me. I was about, at the time, about 18, I think, something like that. I was working in the pump shop. And he came up to me and he said, take your overalls off wash your hands and come with me. I thought, you know, what's going on, you know? And he took me into the library, which was up in the technical department, and he gave me the description of a stone plant pump, and he said, find the details of one of those in the, because he used to keep all the catalogues, you know, in the library. And I found this. He said, well, read it, and I'll come back later. And I thought, well, what's all this about, you know? And another fellow there was Bert Harris. He was responsible for all the maintenance work outside throughout the country. And he brought Bert in, and he said, right, this is the chap you want tomorrow, you see. Now, I found myself on a train up to London the following morning because a stone plant pump had broken down in London at the Alexander Stone Company in Barking, and I had to go and fix it. So I said to Frank Fielder, I said, what's wrong with it? He said, I don't know. You better go and find out, you see. But he said, don't worry, there'll be a maintenance engineer there to look after you. So anyway, off I went. They picked me up at the London station and took me to this place. Of course, the maintenance engineer was on holiday. But I did have a couple of streaks of insanity and got the right answer and fixed the job anyway. So when I came back into the factory the following morning, the first man that came to see me was Frank Fielding. He said, you fix it? I said, yes, sir. He said, what was wrong with it? So I told him, he said, I thought it was. He knew what was wrong with it all along, you see. But it was up to me to find out. And every apprentice went through that at some time in their life.
It must have been, I suppose it must have been daunting, firstly, to talk to someone who was so high up in the company. But also, I suppose, nice that people who were on the managerial side actually had a hands-on feel for the company and knew what was going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the foremen, people like Walt Andrews and all the foremen in the shop, they'd all come up off the shop floor. They knew every nut and bolt in the place, you know. And the directors of the company, Jim and Frank and all the rest of them, and the designers, it was like one big family, really. You know, I've never met anywhere, as I said early on, I've never met anywhere else that was quite like it. It was like one big family. And everybody knew everybody and what the extent of their knowledge should be.
And was that the case in the apprentice school? Were you quite a tight-knit group? I mean, you said when we were talking earlier, looking at the photo, that they were mainly from Central, but you'd come from Tommy Rich's. Were you all united and very close, despite you coming from disparate places?
Yeah, eventually you became, well, this is our group and not the twain shall meet, you know. And of course, when the next group came in after us, you know, you would seek them out and let them know that you were better than them, you know. Because you'd suffered it anyway from the previous one, so, yeah.
So you all had some sort of shared jokes and stuff that you could talk about then.
But mine, young men in those days like that were entirely different to what they are today.
In what ways?
Their outlook on life was different for a start. Their upbringing had been different. They all had responsibilities to their parents and the rest of it, completely different to what it is today. A lot of the young lads today of that age wouldn't put up with what we put up with at Fielding's. I don't mean anything wrong, you know, but it was hard work, and you were expected to learn, and you had to be responsible, you know, which a lot of the young people today wouldn't accept. At least I don't think they would, anyway. But it was well worthwhile.
So in terms of the work that you did in the apprentice school, you've mentioned working on the machines and the bench work as well. Did you have any sort of classes or any other additional things?
Yeah, because there was a classroom upstairs above the offices in the heavy erecting shop. There was a classroom. And we used to have lecturers out there from different people. For instance, a designer would come and lecture us on hydraulics, and Bert would do want to do lectures. And when I was in my last 6 months, I used to do quite a few in the apprentices, all part of the training.
And they'd be people from the factory itself, or would they be brought in from outside?
I can't remember anyone being brought in from outside, but certainly people from the factory. And then, of course, we used to do educational trips. The apprentices, we would go over to Worcester, to Heenan and Froude, which were sort of a companion company to Fielding's, and see what they were doing. We used to go to the steelworks down in Cardiff, Gastine and Nettlefold down there. We'd go all over the place, different trips, and to see how industry worked, if you like. Of course, industry was different in those days. We were apprentices. You were the next working man, if you like, unless you were clever enough to get up in the technical side, you know.
And how often would you go away to these trips?
A couple of times a year. Yeah, a couple of times a year. And then we would go not just as the one year, but you'd have a bus full, you know, so there'd be two or three intakes that would go at the same time. Yeah, very interesting it was.
Going on to talk about your time moving on to the shop floor after the 6 months that you spent in the apprentice school, you said that you went into the light machine shop.
Right. It was the case always with the apprentice intakes. When you'd finished your 6 months in the training school, the 10 of you went into the light machine shop. 5 on days, 5 on nights, fortnight about. Okay. Not only that, you started your technical college, and you did that as night school in the first year. So we would go into the technical college 3 nights a week at 7 o'clock, finish at 9 o'clock, straight into work. So it was pretty hard. Yeah. And then, as I say, you'd be 5 on days, 5 on nights on the Herbert 2D capstans.
And how long would you have done that for, that on-off days and nights?
You'd do that for 6 months. Yeah. Because each term that you did in different shops as you did your apprenticeship through would be 6 months until you finalised.
And what was the light machine shop like?
Very noisy. It was a long, narrow shop upstairs. And the apprentices were everybody's butt up there, you know. You know, you'd come in from night school one day and find your overalls nailed to the wall or something like that, you know. There were a lot of the journeymen up there who used to delight in having a go at the apprentices, you know. But it was all right. They were pretty good. Reg Court was the setter, and he was a character, was Reg. And I went to work with him eventually. And, you'd say he was as mad as a hatter, really. But he was a good setter, and he used to look after the apprentices on the 2Ds.
And when you say that he was a setter, what do you mean?
Well, he'd set the machine up, and then the apprentice would run it. And then during the course of the 6 months there, he would teach you how to set the machine. So he'd take you in turns, you know, spend perhaps a couple of weeks with an apprentice teaching him how to set a machine up and then put him back on. And he was very good, was Reg. Yeah.
And taking the example of the lathe, the capstan lathe, what sort of things would he be teaching you when he taught you to set that up?
Well, there was... You've never worked on a lathe yourself.
Not personally, no, but I've seen many pictures.
It's difficult to describe, but it's a lathe with a turret, you know. And there are various tools associated with it, like a roller box and an end box and all sorts. And you'd have a back and a front tool post. The front tool post would have 4 positions on it, so there was a lot of tooling involved. and it was all bar work. The bar would be fed through the back. And Reg would teach you how to set all the tooling up to do a particular job. Okay. And then he'd take it all down and you had to set it up again. That sort of thing.
So it would just be putting the right bits of the tool in place so that it could run and lathe in.
Produce a particular job, that's right, yeah.
And what sort of things would you be producing on that capstan lathe?
Oh, variety of things, bushes, nuts, bolts, pretty small stuff, but a variety of stuff. Because there was a lot of parts used in fielding presses, you know, and pumps. Oh, there's a lot of stuff. Anything up to 1.5 inch diameter on the 2Ds. Nothing bigger than that. Then what Reg would also have to do, of course, he'd have to keep an eye on his apprentices to see who was likely to make a machinist. Because they would want apprentices to, some to go into the machining side, to come to go into the fitting side, one or two perhaps. From time to time, might get on the technical side, but that depended on your night school results, on your technical college results. You couldn't go in the drawing office until you got a national certificate. And that was a minimum of 3 years to get that. So you would never get into the drawing office until you're in the last year or 18 months of an apprenticeship. Yeah. And not many did that.
Did anyone from your apprentice intake go into the drawing office?
No. Eric Stroud, as I say, he took up the Doughty, what was then Rotol, that'd be before Doughty, took up the Rotol offer of drawing up his training and went out there. I couldn't do it because I couldn't afford to do it. The money was very low and I had a mother to keep one thing and another. It couldn't be done. But Eric did, and then Eric spent all his life there. I don't think anybody else did.
And as well as the capstan, can you remember any other jobs that you did in the light machine shop?
I didn't personally, no, because I'd set my mind then on going into the assembly shops, which I was more interested in. So I didn't do any more machining up there other than the 2Ds. Some of them elevated onto the center lathes and that, but I didn't personally.
So you did your time in the light machine shop, and then did you go on to the assembly shops straight after that?
I went into the heavier, what they call the heavier erecting shop, straight after the machine shop, where they built the big presses, you know. And working under Wilf Gardner, who was the foreman in there. I found it interesting, but I was inclined to say to myself, I'd like to get in the pump shop, and that's where my main interest was. And that's where I eventually ended up for the last 2.5 years of my apprenticeship, apart from the last 6 months when I went back into the training school. So I used to work under a chap named Al Fall. He was a miserable old soul because he had a stomach ulcer. And when that played up, he used to take it out on everybody else. And a chap named Harry Morgan I used to work with a lot. Nice old chap was Harry. He lived up the pitch at Hempstead. And if I take the dog out for a walk sometimes now and go through Hempstead churchyard, I always say hello to Harry because he's buried in the churchyard there. But he was a nice fellow, was Harry.